Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth. It's almost Christmas. How about that? Can you believe it, Brad?
That's why you're wearing the funny hat.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that funny little white beard you have is cute, too.
Thank you.
We've got the Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. And we're going to have on the show a great guy. Brand Harmony is the name of the book. Steve Yastrow is the author of that book. And we'll be bringing Steve on here in just a few moments. Steve is spending the weekend in Deerfield, Illinois, which is good because it's his home. It's good for him to go home once in a while.
He's got a baseball player name, doesn't he? On third base, Steve Yastrow.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll be talking to Steve, and we've got a couple of hours to spend with you, and hopefully you do as well. 2 hours of the Advertising Show as we do each and every weekend. The Wacky World of Marketing, we've got Mary Lou Quinlan. She didn't have a title for this vignette, so we'll just have to figure out what it is, okay? And we'll maybe come up with a title after we hear it.
I think it's 5 seconds of dead air.
No, it's a minute and 30 seconds worth of, but there's
good
a lot
content.
Good content, yeah. And Patrick Myers here with, it's a concept called continual immersion. You know, he's into the immersion thing, which
right.
is a good thing for advertisers and his clients and advertising agencies, but continual immersion, it's not doing it just once, but doing it all the time. So we'll talk, we'll have Patrick on as well. Andy Borowitz, and we've got Goodvertising coming your way.
Good.
At the end of the hour. So there we are.
You know, Ray, if I were to mention LifeMendersEpidemic.com or OnMoney.com, does that mean anything to you?
No.
Me neither.
No.
But you know what they were?
Have the faintest idea.
Super Bowl advertisers back during the dot-com era.
You got to be kidding. Say them again.
LifeMenders.com. Don't go to any of these sites. I don't believe they're up.
But
Epidemic.com and OnMoney.com. But what's interesting is the Super Bowl, the dot-coms are coming back this year, but this time there'll be familiar names. Two major dot-com advertisers, America Online, of course, and Monster.com. We know those very well, planning Super Bowl spots this year. Another, Hot Jobs, is still considering Super Bowl sponsorship or advertising, which, of course, is no cheap feat today. America Online will replace last year's halftime show sponsor E-Trade with a reported $7.5 million deal for the halftime show. The show is to be produced, by the way, by MTV and will likely feature Janet Jackson and Outkast. That's out with a cast, K-A-S-T, of course,
not,
we all know.
Outkast, Michael Jackson, just Janet, right?
Well, yeah, I guess that could be, right? The biggest new advertiser? Gillette.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll be.
And Procter & Gamble debuts this year. Procter & Gamble, I'm surprised, never advertised on the Super Bowl. And one other surprise? Major League Baseball.
Well, that's not a bad idea.
Well, they got confused.
What?
It's football.
Oh.
So I guess they're it's really a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tells you that at the
idea.
End of this, we're about to start up this.
Just if we didn't know that already.
As opposed to the Pro Bowl. Pro Bowl is always exciting after the Super Bowl, isn't it?
No.
No, I agree.
It's kind of like the Skins game in golf. It's like, okay, here we go again, folks.
Yeah.
They got to have something on TV, so let's put something on TV.
Before I forget, Bernice Kenner, who is the author of a book on Super Bowl advertising, will be a guest here in a few weeks on the Advertising Show in January, as we get closer to the Super Bowl, which is the 1st of February.
So she'll be playing in the Super Bowl,
No, she'll be talking to us about advertising the Super Bowl.
That's a good thing. I wonder if Patrick Meyer is going to play this year. Never has before, so he probably won't, huh?
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
I hate to do a retread and go back on something I did years back, but recently I ran into someone that had read an article that I had done in Ad Age that was all about immersion and how to connect yourself to what was going on now and to stay connected. So at his prompting, I'm coming back and sharing it with you today. I'm going to give you 5 steps that you can follow that allow you to stay immersed in what's happening. Number 1, immediately open your eyes to what's going on around you. Start by looking at magazines. Start watching cable stations you wouldn't normally watch. Start going to websites that you can download new music tracks and new things. But look around you. Just change the focus slightly and start looking at other things. Number 2, take some of the stuff that you find in step 1 and create a kitchen of the mind. It's a giant wall in your office, in your home, where you put up intriguing ads, products, trinkets, whatever you find, and build this giant mosaic of intriguing stuff. Number three, go out on scavenger hunts or scavenger immersions. Take a bunch of you, assign each one a different direction to head in. Number four, bring in experts, lifestyle experts, passion point experts on music, sports, entertainment. Bring them in to talk over lunch. Number five, take your management out of the ivory tower, out of the office. Let them see things they would never see. It'll make your life easier when you come forward with progressive thinking if they're more aware of what's going on. So you're asking yourself, what will this immersion do for me? Well, out of immersion comes insight, and out of insight comes innovation and growth.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer from Fusion 5. And remember, the marketing revolution has begun.
See, Brad, you thought immersion was just when you went to, took a bath, right?
Or snorkel.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's not. It's true.
You know, mentioning a segment of the culture and getting in touch with a segment that you're not normally a part of, be it socially or demographically, I think is a great idea. I think we should all do that from time to time.
I think it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I think the ivory tower concept of coming out of the ivory tower is a good thing for executives.
You know, we've asked guests previously what some of their favorite books are, and occasionally you'll get an oddball where he'll say or she'll say, I don't read advertising books. I read books on culture and various groups, and I think
really
it's good to stay in touch with markets or segments that you're not normally living in.
I agree.
Yeah.
On the way, we've got Steve Yastrow, who is author of Brand Harmony, coming up here in just a few moments.
Also third base.
Yeah.
Right.
Or shortstop. He played
Chicago
in
Bears.
The minor leagues. He was shortstop.
Chicago Bears or Cubs? That'd be Cubs.
It'd be Cubs. It has to be the Cubs.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hey, you're talking about P&G before, Procter & Gamble.
Yep.
Now what they're doing is they're pressing on with plans to put radio frequency ID chips, RFID chips, mm-hmm. onto their products, and build marketing programs around them. Isn't that interesting?
To what? To be able to monitor the
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's actually kind of cool. It also smacks a little bit of Big Brother, if you think about mm-hmm. it a little bit. Pretty soon, what will they be putting chips into people?
Well, you know, they're sitting in Cincinnati, you know. When are they planning on doing this? Doing it now or going to launch it next year?
No, they're going to have it coming by 2008, which is just around the corner.
Can you imagine they would be following you around? They say, well, Ray had it in his basket, and they put it back on the shelf. Wait a minute. Now it's in his pocket. We need to arrest that guy.
No, they already have chips for that kind
yeah.
of stuff.
Well, that's exactly. interesting. Yeah, I guess they'll be able to monitor purchases and get quicker data and so forth. I suppose.
It's an interesting concept. Mm-hmm. And being P&G, they'll probably pull it off and do a good job,
don't
you think?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's just about time for the break. You have one more quickie?
Well, just do you know who Saturday Night Live head writer Tina Fey, who also known for her regular appearances on the Weekend Update co-anchor.
Yeah, exactly.
Apparently, she told guests recently at a New York Magazine's awards luncheon that conservative commentator Ann Coulter and Fox News Bill O'Reilly inspire most people to change the channel. And then she added, have you ever seen Ann Coulter in person? She looks like a rat.
She looks like a rat.
Yeah, I guess 'tis the season, huh? Come on, Tina.
Yeah, really.
Take a powder.
Well, sometimes those folks take their jobs a little bit too seriously, don't they?
Well, I guess. She should have saved that for the show.
Exactly. Brand Harmony, Steve Yastrow is up next on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. And we'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Hey, 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 that fly of Ritz sings on the Fritz.
No, no, stop, darling. Don't blow your top. I always keep another box handy.
Dandy. He knows Ritz crackers are richer, crisper, and his mouth is full, or he'd help us whisper. Only Nabisco takes Ritz.
It's The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth, and there's a classic, classic, classic. It sounds like it came from maybe like a piece of vinyl, mm-hmm. maybe some film or something
it
like that.
It did sound like
very
that.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. An early rap song is what it was.
Pre-Andy.
Hey, by the way, if you hear banging on the studio audio today, they're working on the roof here at the studio this weekend, mm-hmm. so Like, that's a good thing because the roof won't leak anymore.
Is that why you have that broom there to knock back on them when they're
did you ever,
cut it out?
Did you ever get that?
Well, in an apartment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Steve Yastrow is our special guest. He's the author of a brand new book called Brand Harmony. Management guru Tom Peters called Steve's book compelling and powerful. And that's good, as opposed to calling it bad things, you know what I mean? And he went on to say it makes branding, in all its power and glory, accessible and exciting. A hint, it's for everyone, not just marketers. So consider this book. You know, we are getting close to the Christmas, day of Christmas, but, you know, we go out there and at the bookstore and grab a copy of that. So, Steve, welcome to the advertising show, and thanks for spending part of your weekend with us.
Thanks, Brad and Ray.
We're doing great here. I speak for Ray. We're speaking to you from, I guess, a suburb of Chicago?
Right, Deerfield, Illinois, just north of Chicago.
Yeah. And so I guess the weather up there is frightful.
Yes.
But the fire is so delightful,
yeah.
Steve.
Yeah. So if you got to know.
No, if you've no place to go.
Oh, well, we don't.
No, we don't. Not for 2 hours.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. That's we'll be doing spinning records here later in the hour, but for now we'll be singing them ourselves. Let's talk a little bit in general about branding before we jump into your book, if you don't mind, Steve.
Sure.
What do you think are some of the biggest, misconceptions today about branding?
I think the biggest misconception is that we've all grown up in a world that was based on a brute force method of branding. The idea that the way to build strong brand impressions in our customers' minds is to try to expose our messages to them as frequently as possible. And I think that we don't quite realize just how ingrained that mindset is in our brains. The idea that he who has the biggest marketing budget and can therefore interrupt customers' lives more frequently will have the strongest brands. My contention is that idea of brute force branding really works in very few instances these days. And what makes a strong brand impression in the customer's mind is not how powerful your message is or how many times your message reaches the customer, but instead by how well every experience they have with your product blends to tell a really powerful story.
That's right. I guess decades ago it was thought that branding was, you know, basically advertising and getting your message across to consumers. And yet I guess there evolved a time where certain companies out there, I suppose, picked up on the fact, I guess, in the last, you tell me, but I'm guessing in the last decade or so, began to realize that branding is more than just advertising. It's a multitude of touch points with the consumer. But were there advertisers back in the 60s that were branding without really understanding that they were branding their company's products or services?
Well, sure. And I think we had a different kind of customer back then. I mean, the first point when you ask, were they branding without realizing it? One thing we have to recognize is that we're branding all the time, whether we want to or not. Mm-hmm. I had the CEO of a company once say to me, you know, I'm not sure if I decided whether we should have a brand or not.
You know,
my comment was, well, it's kind of too late.
Right.
Your customers are evaluating you all the time. The real question isn't whether you should have a brand, but what kind of brand are you going to have? So, of course, people have always been branding because customers have always been forming impressions of them. It was easier, you mentioned back in the 60s, it was easier for, you know, Fly the Friendly Skies or whatever advertising slogans entered the shared consciousness of all people in the country. It was easier to create brand impressions in that way. What's different now, well, a couple things. First is the world's a lot noisier. People have 200 messages coming to them at work every day between voicemail, email, fax, et cetera, and hundreds of promotional messages reaching them when they're not at work. It's very noisy. Additionally, it's a different kind of customer. We are much more savvy, skeptical, self-reliant people now. We don't believe everything we're told. So it's not that advertising doesn't work. It works in a different way, and it can't work by itself to create strong brand impressions.
Certainly the number of channels available to reach a consumer today are you know, vastly more than there were back in the 60s. But do you think the consumer is more sophisticated today than they were decades ago?
I think the consumer they probably are more sophisticated, but they definitely believe that they're more sophisticated. People, if you look at statistics, and I've got some in the book, they don't trust what they hear from media outlets, doctors, advertisers, salespeople, et cetera, as much as they once did. We trust ourselves. We trust our friends. Sure, we get input from advertising, salespeople, et cetera, but we scrutinize it differently. We don't believe it on its face value. We factor in input from many quarters when making decisions. So, yes, the fact that people believe they are more sophisticated is the key issue. We're just not as trustworthy as we once were and don't believe everything just because, you know, as seen on TV.
Right. Yeah, and you mentioned earlier that there's a greater noise level we're dealing with out there. All consumers are, and I guess I'm hearing the number of average messages, ad messages Americans are exposed to each day is somewhere around 3,000 to 5,000 per day. And yet in all probability, many, I believe, if not all, most certainly are ignored. Obviously, it takes more than a catchy slogan or a clever ad to win over today's consumers. I'm curious, do you believe companies and corporations are not wielding their power when it comes to branding like they once did, and instead it's the consumer who's actually in charge today?
I definitely think that the consumer's in charge. And in fact, you asked me about major misconceptions. The first one I mentioned is that without realizing it, most people live under this model of brute force branding, that interrupting your customer is the way to win their loyalty. The other big misconception is the idea about who does the branding. My belief isn't that companies brand their customers the way cowboys brand calves, right? Just stick your brand on them and they'll be branded. On the contrary, I look at it 180 degrees differently. Your customers brand you. Companies don't do the branding. Customers do the branding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a major shift in thinking, but I think it's 100% true. Customers take all the input, all the experiences they have with a company, and then they decide how to think about the company. The real question is, how closely does that brand impression the customer creates in his or her own mind, how closely does it match what you would like them to think when you design your brand strategy?
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're a proponent of branding in a 360-degree approach as opposed to one or two or a few channels, correct?
Yes, and the reason is, gets back to what we mentioned a minute ago, that the customer is in charge.
Mm-hmm.
It's the customer that's decided that every touch point is essentially a marketing interaction. Customers, as far as a customer is concerned, advertising, sales pitches, brochures have no special privilege in forming their brand impressions. A customer can choose anything he or she wants, any interaction with a company, in deciding on the brand impressions. So it's because the customer has the power to form her own brand impressions in her mind that we have to look at this idea of everything is marketing.
Well, Steve, after the break, I want to ask you how a company can influence how a consumer looks at their company and various touch points that you mentioned. We'll do that in just a second.
It's a good thing we have a couple hours to spend with Steve, Brad. It'll be nice to bring us Steve back for the second hour of the Advertising Show here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. We've got this hour still to come. Of course, next is the Wacky World of Marketing, and we've got some good advertising for you a little bit later on this hour. Andy Borowitz will join us in hour two, along with Mary Lou Quinlan, too, in her no title vignette. So we'll bring her back in just a minute. Stay with us on the Advertising Show.
Time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to Cambridge, Massachusetts, where AP reports no need to write a phone number on your hand or tie a string around your finger. Such memory cues may no longer be needed thanks to an MIT grad student. Richard Duvall has developed something he calls memory glasses. It's a tiny computer display clipped to an eyeglass frame. The computer can flash reminders, something that Duvall could use himself. He says he sometimes forgets to eat, sitting at his desktop computer for hours at a time. The memory glasses could be programmed with the reminder, "Hey, Rich, go take a break." Duvall says he hopes to have a commercial version of the technology on the market within a year. And that, my friends, is the Wacky World of Marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Well, hello, boy. Now, what do you say?
Let's make with the popcorn right away.
Too much trouble and bother. Yes, indeed.
No, man, heat's all you need.
You need more than heat, boy, according to Hoyle. You need popcorn, salt, butter, and oil. And a frying pan, or to be completely proper, you ought to have a popper.
I dig it. You ain't hip, old man. It's an easy pop, popped in its own pan.
Easy pop popcorn, a classic spot from the advertising show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And our special guest today is Steve Yastrow, who is the author of a brand new book called Brand Harmony. Steve has also been busy doing other things, Brad.
Mm-hmm.
He developed the concept behind Brand Harmony were developed in the real world through Steve's work as president of Yastrow Marketing, a consulting firm which has served such clients as McDonald's Corporation, the Tom Peters Company, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So, Steve, thanks for spending time this weekend on The Advertising Show.
Thank you.
You know, before the break, we were talking about how you were mentioning how, Steve, a consumer is really the one in charge of a company's brand. And looking at it from that perspective, are there steps a company can take to either influence or make certain that they are making the right impression with the consumer and having some kind of, at least feeling like they have some kind of control over that consumer's perception of their brand?
Sure, definitely. There are many things we can do. Just because we acknowledge that the customer has power doesn't mean that we have to
relinquish
our tent and think we can't affect branding. It's just it's a little harder when you realize that the customer is the one who makes the ultimate decision. Ultimately, the challenge is to orchestrate all of the experiences customers have in a way that tells a real powerful cumulative story, and the customer can say, I get it. I want to be involved with this company. And that's kind of what the idea of brand harmony is that you orchestrate all the experiences so they blend together. So that obviously brings up a lot of questions. What are those experiences? What is the story you want the customer to hear? And we can get to that. I think in essence, one of the things that you got to think about first is that because everything is marketing, what it really means is that marketing isn't just a department in the company. And one of the first things you have to do if you're going to recognize that customers are listening to this brand harmony is you have to recognize that everybody in your company is essentially in the marketing department. And the way I work on it with companies is talking about the fact that every person in the company needs to be the brand as they do their jobs, because customers are evaluating you as if you were the brand.
Mm-hmm. So how do you determine what some of those customer experiences are, not some or all of them? Is that research? Is that immersion? Or is that how do you do that?
Well, there's lots of ways, and obviously you have to. There's a number of steps we can talk about determining what the brand strategy should be and what the story is you'd like to tell. But let's focus on the touch points. What I find is extremely helpful is to map out the paths customers take as they interact with your company. And, you know, we tend to have marketing calendars that are based on our calendar. We're going to put ads out in January and direct mail out in February. Flip it around. Think of it from the customer's perspective. What happens over time to the customer as they learn about your products, learn about your company, as they go through the process of becoming a customer, and what touch points happen after they already are a customer? I like to take a big war room, paper it with post-it easel paper, and map out all the paths customers take. What usually happens is people turn white when they recognize just how many touch points affect customer brand impressions. Obviously, you can't clean them all up at once. So what I recommend for people to do after they get a strong map of all of the touch points is look for two kinds of touch points: those that most influence customers' brand impressions and those where your company has the most room for improvement. Many times they're the same.
Mm-hmm.
That will then give you an idea of where to focus improvements in a customer experience.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Moving on to another subject for now, are there some contemporary challenges facing brands today that maybe weren't such a influence a decade ago?
Yes. I mean, we discussed two of them earlier, which I think are worth putting at the top of the list. One is a customer who is much more scrutinizing and much less tolerant, much more self-reliant. And I say consumer, it's a business-to-business customer also. Mm-hmm. Whether a person is buying for their business or buying for their personal life, they are much more scrutinizing, much less tolerant, much less ready to believe what they are told in a promotional promise. That's a major issue. Additionally, all of the noise that customers face. Because there are 3,000 to 5,000 ad messages a day and a couple hundred messages reaching you at work, you can't cut through and get in touch with your customers just by shouting louder in that noise. They're already putting their hands up and trying to shut out the noise. Then, of course, there are the other trends we know so much about, just the fragmentation of media, the fragmentation of touch points, the fact that there are so many places to reach customers, and additionally, that there are so many choices for the customers to make. All of this translates to a real shift in power from people who sell things to people who buy things. The fact is, everything we're talking about means the customer's got more power, and therefore, we have to work harder if we want to connect with them and create that strong, I get it, kind of a brand impression.
And certainly and we're going to talk more about this after the break. We have a little less than a half minute left here, but we're going to discuss the role that the internet has had in giving, information, and information is power from a consumer standpoint, and the shift in what has happened as it relates to the consumer armed with information going into a retail situation or even just dealing with a company online or offline. And we're going to save some conversation for that right after the break, Steve.
This is Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth here on The Advertising Show. By the way, go to brandharmony.com if you want to find out more about Steve and about his book. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Pepsi-Cola, it's the spot. 12 full ounces, that's a lot. Twice as much for a nickel, too. Pepsi-Cola is a drink for you. Nickel, 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 nickel.
Okay, that jingle probably didn't cost much more than the actual nickel price of the can of, and it wouldn't have been a can of pop,
no,
it would have been a bottle of pop.
Yeah. And you would have used an opener.
Exactly.
You do in your beer.
Yeah, right.
Because you drink that expensive import stuff.
Yeah, a cork. I don't think they make beer with corks anyway.
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
Yeah, it's that.
Oh, that, the
Trappist Monk stuff.
Okay.
Like Chimay and
Chimay.
Okay. And
there's another
Steve
one
knows.
Too.
Yeah, a lot of that Belgium.
Rausch has. Yeah,
Belgium ale is, I think, what they call it.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the beer show.
Yeah,
here on the Advertising
Cigars
show.
Next hour.
Fine with me.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that too.
And wine after work.
Live from Deerfield, Illinois. It's Steve Yastrow, author of the book Brand Harmony, and we talked about beer. Let's talk about advertising now.
Why not?
Okay, go for it.
You know, before the break, we were talking about the internet and the role that it has played in helping consumers understand before they get into a transaction about a company's product or services, and with that information, be armed with the kind of power that used to not exist for a consumer. Certainly, e-commerce companies stumbled, I guess, a few years ago, Steve. Yet the internet still plays a very important role as it relates to consumerism and being able to make better choices for themselves. What impact has this had on companies as it relates to their brand and being able to improve their position as it relates to the transaction from brand back to the consumer?
Well, as we talked about before the break, one of the major shifts we're all dealing with is that power has transferred from the seller to the buyer. And one of the reasons is that buyers have access to plentiful objective information. You go buy a car these days, you don't have to depend on the salesperson to tell you about the crash test data. You can find it so easily in many places, many on the internet. And you know, you can find out what the invoice price was for the car, right? So first issue is just major access to information, as we know. But when you talk about branding in the way we've been discussing it, where many experiences cumulatively tell customers a story, and our challenge as marketers is to orchestrate those experiences in a way that creates a powerful brand harmony, then we can see that good internet marketing is internet marketing that blends in a series of experiences to the total customer brand experience. Think back 5 years ago. We all looked at internet marketing and internet selling as kind of a separate, discrete channel. You'd find out about the product on the internet, you'd buy it, etc. Now what we realize is that many transactions that aren't consummated over the internet are well-enabled if the process of learning about the product, figuring out how to buy it, or maintaining it, upgrading it once you've got it, are enhanced by that experience. If you look at the internet marketing as another set of touch points to blend into the overall brand experience, that's when you can have the most impact.
Well, you know, you mentioned, I guess, integration. You know, there, one time before the internet, integration was just using multimedia in a similar way and making certain that your marketing messages were all pointing in the same direction and saying the same, having the similar, if not same message. But today, integration is having the same message both offline and online with the internet and the role that it plays. Everyone talks about integration, but few seem to be able to execute it effectively. Why do you think that is, Steve?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons. If customers are considering every interaction they have with you, in essence, who's doing the integrating? You know, we always looked at integrated marketing as something marketers did. It's really the customer who does the integrating. They integrate every experience into their brain. But how are companies set up? Companies have a marketing department who's responsible for marketing, operations people who are responsible for the operating of the business, et cetera. And oftentimes those people don't have control over each other's areas within the organization, but the customer is integrating experiences with both and with many more than just those two. So the real challenge here is that our organization charts inside our companies don't reflect the way customers are evaluating us. And that's a major challenge. And the companies that can overcome that are those that have the kind of leadership that gets everybody across all departments being the brand in the same way so that the customer hears a cumulative, powerful story.
We have about a half second left. So a lot of it's turf wars, you say, maybe in the corporate environment?
When I see companies fall down on this, that's a big part of it.
Really? Let's take a break here and on the advertising show. We're going to bring Steve back for hour number two. We've got good advertising coming your way. Of course, we've got Mary Lou Quinlan, Andy Borowitz on the way, too. And Steve Yastrow, the book is Brand Harmony. And if you'll stay with us, we'll be back in just a minute.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Never borrow money needlessly, just when you must. Borrow them where loans are a specialty from folks you trust. Borrow confidently from HFC.
Household Finance Corporation offices are listed in your telephone book.
They certainly are. Gee, why didn't they try to tag that spot with a phone number, huh?
Or a disclaimer.
Yeah.
You know, when I hear that commercial, and we've played it occasionally here on the advertising show, I've never told you this, Ray, it reminds me of my childhood.
Oh, me too.
It's no secret. I was not raised in what would considered a wealthy family.
Mm-hmm.
I would be stretching it even maybe to say middle class.
Okay.
But whenever I would go get the mail, there'd be an HFC
invoice?
Account. Well, it'd be an ongoing account
I
update.
See.
Yeah, and my mom handled the finances.
You were part of the Platinum Club there?
Well, let me put it this way. If they would have had a celebrity spokesperson for HFC back in those days, he would have hand-delivered it over to our house.
Kind of like
Here,
Ed McMahon does,
keep
right?
it going. Anyway.
You got Christmas cards from them, too, didn't you?
Well, it's funny because it was before credit cards got real popular, and
sure.
It was really a source.
It was the only way to get money. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly right. Yeah, I know exactly.
It's kind of a funny thing.
Yeah, and it was a very memorable jingle, too.
I remember it well because every time I heard it, and if I was in the living room watching television, it pissed my dad off so much it always had an impact on me. And then he'd glare at my mother. It was not fun. Anyway, but those times are gone, and thankfully for my mother, she was a great person that influenced my life because she made sure that whether it was HFC or any other way.
Right.
We had some potatoes. We had
some
potatoes on the table.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Anyway,
that's sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, and now back to the psychiatrist show.
Yeah. On the, thank you, the Dr. Zen. Put your feet up on the console there, Ray. It was a tough time.
Yeah. Well, we got the couch in the lobby. You can take that if you'd like that.
Well, you know, during the holidays, a lot of people think about family stuff, you know.
Sure they do.
And I know that that in your world, that dysfunctional family you were raised in. I'm kidding. I can't say that with a straight face.
Are good friends with your dysfunctional family.
Yeah. We were at
they
PTA
went to the same
together.
Shrink.
Yes. In the same den.
Yeah, it's a group hug.
Cub Scouts.
Okay, the advertising show. By the way, we've got Steve coming back next hour. We've got good advertising right now. What this is, it's the advertising showcase. It's something that actually happened that was good. You know, if this were Bob Garfield's column or something like that, it would mostly be advertising.
Which we're going to have on in a few weeks.
Yeah, so I'll have Bob on. Let's do
And now it's time for the Advertising Show's Advertising Showcase, an outstanding example of on-target advertising for the good stuff. Here's Ray and Brad.
Here they are, and what do you have?
Well, we've talked about them before. It's been a while, but, you know, good advertising is good advertising, and if it's the same product but a different spot, and they're worthy of being featured as the advertising showcase, then it needs to be featured.
Yes, it does.
Well, the new spot for Mini Cooper entitled Parking Ramp gets my vote this week, and I don't know if you've seen it, but in case you have not, let me kind of take you through it. And by the way, it's another great example of, in my opinion, brand building on behalf of Mini by Crispin Porter and Bogusky out of Miami. And, you know, we were talking about branding with a new product. Sometimes the big impact on a new product's brand is through advertising and marketing channels, in this case a TV spot, especially when you're trying to create a brand for a new product.
Sure.
But the spot opens with a Mini pulling into a public parking garage as the car begins to travel up the circular ramp. You've seen those circular ramps, Ray, that you go through a public parking garage. The camera follows the car through this circular journey, eventually reaching the roof of the parking garage. And by the way, you'll like this, Ray. All along this process, you're hearing only sound effects, no voiceover announcer, but the sound effects are the sounds one might hear as you're, like, going up a long, steep incline of a roller coaster, for example. But the Mini, as it progresses up the circular ramp, if you will.
Sure.
It reaches the roof of the parking garage, and as it creeps towards the down ramp on the other side, again, you're hearing the sound effects. Now you see both arms of the passenger come out of the sunroof. You know, kind of like if you're getting ready to go down a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear the screaming, and then the sound effects and continue, and now they intensify, and basically you fade to graphics at that point, and the simple words, "Let's Motor," comes up, and then you have the Mini, you cut to the Mini Cooper, and that's the Mini Cooper logo, and that's the spot. I mean, it's, you know, what I really like about this spot is that it cleverly and concisely communicates one simple message, which is these cars are fun to drive. So, you know, so many times automotive advertising tries to do too much. They try to communicate, you know, that our car is fast or pretty or usable, utilitarian, whatever the case may be. And it leaves the viewer wondering what in the world was the real message there. But yet with the Mini spot, you're continuing to grow the brand identity of the product, which, again, simple message is that this is a fun car to drive. And congratulations to Mini Cooper for taking a risk with their advertising, because as we all know, if you take a risk, you will enjoy the rewards oftentimes.
You will.
So Crispin Porter and Mini.
And you won't feel bad about that as well.
Should not.
Yeah. That's important. So many times you get it and we get it. Folks want to put a dozen, maybe two dozen things in a commercial.
Keep it simple.
Like, come on now, folks.
Keep it simple.
Don't you understand? It's so simple.
And take a risk. Do something different. It's not that hard.
No, it isn't. And we'll be back next hour. We've got Steve coming back. The book is called Brand Harmony, and we'll have Steve back. We've got, Mary Lou Quinlan, Andy Borowitz, and another wacky world of marketing.
I'm looking forward to seeing what Mary Lou has to say with that nameless vignette.
No title.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know what it is.
She always has good stuff to say, but usually she has a title.
I know. It's like, come on, Mary Lou. Come up with a title. Or a brand, I guess.
She was on vacation that week, I guess.
I guess so. Back in just a minute with the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Thank you.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth.
Well, this is officially hour two of The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth, being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. And we've got Steve Yastro back with Brand Harmony, and he'll be joining us here in just a little while. Wacky World of Marketing, Mary Lou Quinlan up this quarter, Andy Borowitz, and all that kind of good stuff, too. So there we are. Hey, did you get a flu shot this year?
Mm-mm.
Did you?
I never do. I let my body do it naturally.
I don't either. But yeah. Many people do. And right. I know now there's a shortage of flu vaccines.
Well, I've heard about it. People are dying of this thing.
Yeah.
Not the vaccine, but the flu.
There was a product viewed, apparently, this is out of Advertising Age, a few weeks ago. It's one of the biggest flops of the year. Now it's in hotly in demand, that is, thanks to the media-fueled public panic over the flu outbreak. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it would be media-fueled. It's called
sure.
the news, and
right.
so that's the media. The run on the flu shots that caused a nationwide shortage appears to have at least temporarily resuscitated the fortunes of Flu Mist. It's a nasal spray vaccine co-marketed by Wyeth and Metal Hume, because of its high cost and limited indication for use, many doctors and patients shunned the product. But now, because there's no flu vaccine,
sure.
there's an opportunity to resuscitate this brand.
Take what you can get.
So, if you want to get a shot, ask your doctor about Flu Mist, because apparently that's what's happening now.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear, it's interesting, in our home market here, it doesn't matter, most major markets have a news talk radio station, right?
Yeah.
I guess Sodom was captured late Saturday, but wasn't announced until Sunday morning on the U.S. news.
Right.
On Wednesday, I was listening to a news talk radio station, I think it was Wednesday morning of this week.
Yes.
And they said they had an exclusive coming on about the capture of Saddam Hussein.
They did, really?
And I'm thinking exclusive. This is Wednesday now.
Uh-huh.
What could you – I don't know about you, Ray, but if I saw one more shot of the inside of his mouth and the checking for ticks and stuff on his head.
Yeah, unsightly beard, yes, that was nice, too.
The thing that apparently everyone in Iraq is asking for this holiday season as far as a gift, they want their own spider hole. I mean, it's now a popular item that you get.
Maybe the Hiltons can pick up on that or something.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe.
There you go. Let's check in with Mary Lou Quinlan on The Advertising Show.
And now, stay tuned for What Women Want. Insights from listening to your most powerful customer. Here's Mary Lou Quinlan.
Hey, Brad and Ray. I know that this segment is called What Women Want, but today I want to talk about men, which isn't that weird since many women do want them. So here's an equal time segment on men. Let's start with men and shopping. Men say if they want a shirt, they go to a certain store, pick out a shirt, put down the credit card, and boom, over and out, that's shopping. That's different than the way women shop. See, women may go in as mission shoppers, but once there, they can totally divert to the shoe department. But I digress. Back to men. Men don't dish the way women do. For instance, my husband Joe and I have a friend named Sam. About a year ago, Sam married Jill. Huge wedding, so married. But after about 6 months, Sam started showing up without Jill. "What's up with Sam and Jill?" I said to Joe. "I don't know," he mumbled. Well, finally, Joe went out to dinner with Sam, and I couldn't wait till he got home so I could find out what was going on. Joe walked in the door. "So, what's happening with Sam and Jill?" "I don't know. We never talked about it." "What? If it were me, I would have found out all the gory details from new girlfriends to divorce lawyers." Why does this matter to you as a marketer? Well, it's actually a lesson about women. Women love to talk, to investigate, and then to share what they learn with others, down to the most personal details. That's why they make great marketing partners. Just ask and get ready to learn more than you can imagine, even if you're a man. Just kidding, guys.
This has been What Women Want from The Advertising Show with your host, Mary Lou Quinlan, CEO of Just Ask a Woman. To learn more about what women want, visit justaskawoman.com.
This is Mary Lou Quinlan reminding you, if you want to know what women want, stop selling and start listening.
Okay, so what happened to Sam and Jill, though, or whatever?
I think that was the best of Mary Lou right there, wasn't it?
I don't know.
No.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting because, you know, she's absolutely right. The dishing and all that.
Yeah.
I hear my wife all the time dishing, but yet you and I never dish.
Yeah, right.
On the air.
On the air,
yeah.
Right. I still want to know what happened. I think what happened is Sam married Joe, and Jill's out now.
I think
Jill's dating Sue.
Sam married Mary Lou. No, oh, we can't say that.
I don't know.
No, I don't
but
think
she,
so. Mary Lou's
Mary
happily
Lou,
married.
Leave us hanging like that.
She's
Come on
happily
now.
Married. Her husband's a very nice guy. I think his name's Joe, didn't she say? Joe, her
I
husband?
I don't know. Yeah. No, that was Sam.
Sam?
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't Jill.
Well, who knows? Are these people taking notes out there?
Steve Yastro is the special guest today on the advertising show. The book is called Brand Harmony. We've got Steve on here in just a few minutes.
I wanted to mention to you, Ray, a new reality show that's ending in an arranged marriage is set for TV, and I'm going to call it Who Wants to Marry a Middle Easterner?
Yeah?
Because, no, it's not another version of Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire, but it is a show entitled Al Hawa Sawa, or Being Together,
right,
will air in the Middle East and feature 8 women who live in a house together and meet prospective husbands while viewers vote for their favorite couples.
Okay.
The network airing the show is also planning the Middle East first Big Brother in Bahrain. Unlike the British and American versions, however, alcohol and tobacco will be banned, and competitors, will be expected to maintain a high moral code of conduct.
Or contact.
Well, contact, too, probably. But, you know, which, of course, means it'll be a complete flop. Nobody will watch it.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know about you, but since they have to be so straight and narrow with everything and stay with the culture like that, what's next? Bill Moyers going over there to do his version of Jerry Springer or something?
Hope not. Hope not. That'd be kind of sad.
Isn't that funny, though?
Yeah, it really is funny.
Middle East picking up on what we so love to hate here in the U.S. Reality TV kind of silly sometimes.
It'll have its end. It'll go and come and go.
Don't tell that to the investors of the reality cable TV channel.
Oh, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. If you guys open your eyes a little bit wider and see what's going on, folks.
Ray just could have saved you a lot of dough there.
Yeah, I could have.
Yeah.
And if
maybe
you'd like
you
to
did.
Invest in our company, that's fine. No problem. You know, we talked about Hispanics and how important they are in marketing. The
Always.
Wall Street Journal is considering a Spanish language publication. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
For the U.S. Hispanic market, the most likely model is the 10-year-old Wall Street Journal, Journal Americas, which circulates now to 1.7 million readers in Latin America as a daily Spanish language insert in leading newspapers in 16 countries. So that's going to be real interesting if they do something like that.
You know, ESPN is also planning on a new full-time Spanish language network, ESPN Deportes. It's slated for a January 7th launch. Mm-hmm. The network plans to air more than 200 live events, including NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL, Wimbledon, French Open, and, of course, boxing.
Boxing.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but isn't it about time that ESPN picked up on the fact that they might want to do a Spanish-speaking version of their network?
Oh, yeah.
That seems as obvious as what you were talking about with Wall Street Journal.
I think that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Steve Yastro is up next on the advertising show, playing third base for the Cubs or something like that, right?
No. Yeah.
Brand Harmony is the book, and we'll talk to Steve in just a minute.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
Now, snap, what a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, clap, clap, but snap makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies.
Brad, can you hand me the milk on that one, please? Thank you.
I just spilled it.
A little bit of a late brunch here on the weekend. For the advertising show, it's Ray Schillings along with Brad Forsyth, and our special guest, Steve Yastro, is author of a brand new book called Brand Harmony. You can find out more about that by going online to brandharmony.com. And, of course, Steve, that'll tell them where to go find the book. Is that right?
Yes, you can buy it there. You can buy it from Amazon, Borders, Barnes & Noble.
Beautiful.
Pretty good distribution.
Beautiful. Just in time for
the holiday.
Don't you hate that line? Just in time for Christmas.
How many times have you been recording commercials for that this year, Ray?
Just many times. Yeah, exactly. Hey, Steve's passion is marketing beyond the marketing department, helping companies align their entire organization to create powerful, motivating experiences for customers, which, if you don't know, are pretty important to your product and your brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and since you're a branding expert, Steve, let me get this out of the way for people just now joining us. I've never heard more definitions for a word than when I hear industry guests defining the word branding. So let's get your definition of branding out of the way, Steve.
Good. You're right. It's one of the most misinterpreted words in marketing, probably even more than interactive. When I ask people, what do you think of the word brand, I usually hear Kleenex, Budweiser, or I hear a logo, an image. What I like to think of, a brand as a thought a customer has that motivates that customer to be more or less involved with a product.
So it's a... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's that simple. To me, a brand is a thought, and that thought motivates action or inaction.
So what you did is you just defined it in its origin, I suppose, and from the thought outgrowth from there, I guess, becomes what the consumer's is it next the perception and then the experience. How would you delineate that?
Yeah, this, as we mentioned in the first segments, I'm a firm believer that customers brand companies. Companies don't brand customers. It's kind of a little daunting to think about, but you can't really hold your brand. You can hold your product, but your customer creates the brand impression as they interact with your company and your product. That thought the customer forms influences their action. Are they going to become your customer or decide to become somebody else's customer? Are they going to decide to buy the upgraded model or buy the economy model? Are they going to tell their friends your product is wonderful or not? All of those actions that customers take are influenced by what the customer thinks, and what the customer thinks is influenced by every experience they have with the product.
Well, let's say you have a new product that no one, and it's in a new category, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Do you go about the branding of that product differently than you do with an existing brand that may have decades of history?
Well, sure. The process of branding is a cumulative process. Customers form their impressions over time as they have multiple interactions. Obviously, if nobody knows about your product, the first challenge is to get them to know about your product. The problem is, though, is that awareness is overall the most overrated branding characteristic. Sure, it counts, but oftentimes we assume that our goal in branding is to get people to know the name of our product, when in reality, there is a big difference between knowing the name and doing something about it. Most times companies spread their resources too thin by trying to get their name out there, so to speak, when they could probably end up with better business results by worrying less about spreading their name to as many people as possible and focusing on getting the right people to not just know the name but be able to say, I get it, I want to be involved with that company.
So are you a big believer of the so-called covert product placement where we've all read about, beautiful women? Ray, we've talked about this. Beautiful women that you hire, models that mm-hmm. will go out to a nightclub or a bar, and they'll be standing at the bar there, and they'll be asking when some gentleman comes up to them, not just a drink, but a particular type of vodka or whatever, and then they strike up a conversation about that vodka, and that's all a paid political announcement that is done on behalf of a particular brand. And it's do you agree that that can be an effective way of getting your word to the right people and creating some kind of brand stir on your product?
Well, yes, but you got to be careful, of course, because why could it work? Why could our product placements in lots of places, why could they work? Well, as we've said, your customer has the power to choose any experience with your product in evaluating it. So that could be a very legitimate brand experience if the customer is impressed by it. On the other hand, we've been talking about today's customer is very scrutinizing, very skeptical going into and has their antenna up all the time for promotional messages that they don't necessarily believe in. So you better be careful that it comes off sincerely and doesn't end up raising the antenna of the scrutinizing customer who's going to probably penalize you for it quite greatly.
Well, let's talk about product placement deals then, where we all know that, for example, the Mini Cooper I mentioned last hour, as far as one of their recent commercials, they've done some very innovative marketing beyond just paid traditional advertising on television. And an example of that, and we talked about this, Ray, a few weeks ago, the movie The Italian
The Italian Job.
Right. Yes. They featured Mini Coopers throughout that movie, and I thought they did a good job of integrating the product to the storyline as opposed to some product placements where you ask yourself, what in the world was that, and how does that relate to the scheme of things in the TV program or the movie or whatever the case may be. Is product placement a good way to build a company's brand?
Well, sure. But as we've talked about, the customer – looks at many experiences. So product placement is a very legitimate candidate for one of those great experiences. The trick is not to look at it in a vacuum and how it itself works, but to look at how it complements and blends with every other experience the customer has. It's just like advertising. Advertising is a very powerful brand building mechanism, but an ad's effectiveness isn't how many times the customer sees it or how powerful the message is. It's how well it blends with every other experience the customer has. Same with product placement.
Mm-hmm.
If it fits into the overall scheme of experiences you're trying to orchestrate for your customers, then yeah, it can be a very powerful way to build brand impression.
Mm-hmm. So staying with this line of thought, we've got just a minute and a half or so left here. Celebrities. We see a lot of advertisers using celebrities today, certainly Halle Berry and Justin Timberlake for McDonald's, Madonna more recently for The Gap, I guess. Ray, you reported several months ago about Celine Dion and her work for Chrysler. They've now mm-hmm. shelved her because apparently it was a failure. And, you know, I don't know. I guess I kind of sensed that when I saw that skinny woman.
It was an odd connection.
Match, yeah. It was an odd match. But anyway, can you run some risk here when you hire a celebrity to speak on behalf of your brand?
Well, sure. One of the biggest risks is financial. It costs a lot, right? Mm-hmm,
right.
And you got to make sure that it's going to add the right contribution to this brand harmony. If it does, great, but be careful what you spend. And I think that there is oftentimes, and we've all seen it firsthand, and we can keep the names hidden to protect the guilty, but we've all seen where companies get infatuated with this idea of having a celebrity spokesman
mm-hmm.
or hiring whether it's a sports star or a prominent actor, actress, et cetera, it's easy to fall into the trap of the executive infatuation with the concept without really thinking, is this going to make customers motivated to be more involved with our company?
I
think often the biggest risk is just a financial one. Yes, if the celebrity ends up portraying an image that's dissonant with your brand. Then
which you always run the risk of as well. Well, look, we talked about Tiger Woods with his connection with Buick. Doesn't seem to be hurting the brand, though. It seems to be making more sense now what they're doing with him and that brand. I'd be interested to find out whether it makes any difference in the overall sales and brand awareness for that product.
As they say, no one ever got fired for hiring Tiger Woods.
No. Yeah. And he's cheap, I understand.
Yeah.
$2 million to show up at a golf tournament now.
Yeah.
Brand Harmony is the book. Steve Yastro is our special guest. And we're talking to Steve in Deerfield, Illinois. Is there snow on the ground there, Steve?
There sure is.
Okay. Well, they'll be there the next winter, all the way through probably March or April.
Oh, at least April.
Yeah, exactly.
We only have three seasons in Chicago: winter, thunderstorms, and road construction.
Perfect. I love that. That's great. We'll be back with more. We've got the Wacky World of Marketing on the way coming up next. Later on this hour, it's Andy Borowitz and more with Steve in just a minute with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show.
And now, it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update once again heads to England, where the wacky always seems to happen. A Durham carpet maker gets German brothel contract. That's right, a British firm has won a contract to supply a carpet featuring a naked woman surrounded by a border of male anatomy to a German brothel. The Durham firm Hugh McKay has previously supplied carpet for the Houses of Parliament and the Tower of London. A spokesman for the company says, "Carpet is carpet is carpet. It's the design that appears on it that makes it different. We will provide our product for whoever wants it. If they stipulate a certain design, then we will try our best to do it." And that, my friends, is the Wacky World of Marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
There's nothing like the face of a kid eating a Hershey bar. There's nothing like it you'll ever see. A face as happy as it can be. There's nothing like the face of a kid when he's munching on the greatest taste around. Hershey, the great American chocolate bar.
And I believe Hershey never came out with a low-fat candy bar, right? It's just they are what they are, right. And that's good, and so be it, right?
Like Hershey almost is synonymous with chocolate, right?
Sure it is. Yeah. Well, Hershey, PA, yeah, absolutely. Right. Steve Yastrow, our special guest, author of Brand Harmony, spending some time with us this weekend from Deerfield, Illinois. Where is Deerfield, Illinois? Whereabouts is that?
With no traffic, I'm 35 miles north of Chicago. With traffic, we don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
With traffic,
straight north, almost on the lake.
With traffic, he's the one with the 9mm on his dash.
Considers working in Milwaukee instead, right?
might be quicker.
Yeah, really.
Hey, before the break, Steve, we were talking a little bit about whatever in the world we were talking about. Branding, of course. And I wanted to ask you, let's jump back into your book for a second, Brand Harmony. Describe for us, if you will, the central hypothesis of your book.
Sure. The idea of branding is this. What forms strong brand impressions in customers' minds isn't how many times you're able to get your powerful advertising or sales pitch in front of them or how powerful that message is. It's not that. What builds a strong brand impression in a customer's mind is when all experiences the customer has with your product and your company blend harmoniously to tell a really powerful story.
So is there a way a company can go about this just in a step-by-step basis?
Sure. In fact, it's one of the things I focus on in the book is got about 9 implementation steps and a whole section devoted to creating a better sense of brand harmony. I think the first thing to realize is that your customers are the ones who are doing brand harmony. Right at this very moment, your customers are using brand harmony to evaluate you. All the experiences they have are blending. So I don't think you have a choice about doing this or not. The question is, are you going to create a stronger brand harmony? And to do that, the company has to really understand what it is it wants its customers to think about the product and then orchestrate all the experiences the customer has to do that. And the steps to do that are accessible. They can be done. They just require a lot of diligence, and it requires everybody in the company to be a part of the marketing process.
Well, yeah, it's been said here on the show by previous guests that marketing is too important to be handled by the marketing department. Do you agree with that concept, and does it really require the CEO to get out from behind his or her desk and get down into the trenches and really experience from the other side what the consumer is experiencing with their company, or can a CEO leave that up to a marketing director?
Well, it's a great question and a very rich topic. The marketing department plays a very strong role, of course, but I think an evolved and different role than in older times. It used to be that a couple people in the marketing department could create the messages that go out to customers, but now it requires everybody in the company. Many of those people don't report to the marketing department. So if the director of marketing walks over to the head of customer service or the head of the call center or the head of the factory and says, here's what I want you to do, they might get the door slammed in their face.
Mm-hmm.
So where it requires CEOs and senior executives is to help communicate what it takes to be the brand so that everybody can work together and will follow the strategies developed by the marketing department, even though they don't report to the marketing department.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, one trend that I see in all the companies I work with is that I get to a company, start working with them, the marketing people are focused exclusively on sending messages out to the world. By the time we get done improving a program of brand harmony, what you find is that the marketing people are not only sending messages to the outside, they are marketing to their own colleagues, spending time orchestrating, being kind of like an orchestra conductor, getting everybody in the company to understand what it means to be the brand. Internal marketing becomes a very, very critical function when you're trying to create brand harmony. And the marketing people need to employ the same techniques they use in creating brand harmony with external customers when trying to market to their colleagues within the company.
You're out there giving speeches and workshops for CEOs of the Fortune 500. What percentage of companies today do you feel are doing exactly what you just described?
Well, very few. I think that it's interesting when you ask it, too, in terms of the Fortune 500. Sure, there's some bigger companies that can do a good job of orchestrating experiences, but the bigger you are, the harder it is because there are more moving parts, more people involved. We always grew up in this world of brute force branding, thinking that the biggest companies with the biggest marketing budgets could create the best brands. But it's not true anymore. When it comes to creating brand harmony, smaller companies have an easier time of integrating and orchestrating all of their employees' activities to create a more integrated brand experience. So I think the playing field's been leveled. And when you think of branding not as a process of spreading the word and getting your name out to the masses, but instead think of branding one customer at a time, getting individual customers to say, I get it, I want to be involved with this company, you can see that smaller companies have an advantage. I think the playing field's been leveled. And smaller companies now have an advantage in branding they never had before.
Well, that's a very good point. I would challenge any CEO or president of a large corporation that's listening now or an entrepreneur that happens to own a small business, ask yourself, how many times have you actually called your place of business the way consumers do and felt what it feels like to be a customer, whether it's through the phone system or any other ways of being able to remain anonymous during the process?
More with Steve Yastrow coming up here in just a minute on The Advertising Show. The book is Brand Harmony. We've got more conversation coming your way in just a minute. Don't go away.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsythe.
Do you know exactly how to read an Oreo? Well, to do it, you unscrew it very fast. Cause a kid will eat the middle of an Oreo first and save the chocolate cookie outside for last.
See? There's so much frosted cream between.
Back with you on The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins, along with Brad Forsythe and our special guest, Steve Yastrow, who is author of Brand Harmony. And that's a great spot for Oreo, you know, do-it-yourself kind of thing, instructions on how to eat their product. What a great concept.
And, you know, products just don't come with instructions much anymore, especially cookies.
No, they don't.
But what was it? You aired a classic commercial a while back that was a commercial for Chiquita brand bananas.
Yes.
And
it told you when to eat it.
How to eat it. Put it on your cereal or, you know. And
right before it turns black.
Exactly.
And when it turns black, it's too late.
Bruising's not a bad thing.
No, exactly.
It means it's
right.
Ripe.
One final segment here with Steve. Back with you.
You know, we were talking about the customer experience and branding. I noticed in Ray reading your bio, Steve, that you had worked at the Hyatt Corporation. You also, of course, I want to work with you on the Cayman Island Department of Tourism and wondering when we might be going down there to Grand Cayman to work on that account. But we had a gentleman on and have had on frequently, Jeffrey Gittimer, who does a lot of traveling, and he's a sales consultant,
trainer,
and also a columnist for the business journals across America. And he mentions when he travels that when he's standing in line and getting ready to check into a hotel, his brand experience has been something along the lines of the person at the front desk saying, "Next," and then he walks up and they say, "Name, please," and he sits there and he goes, "You know, I just wish they would be a little more personable and make me feel like I'm a guest in their hotel."
Guest, right.
Yeah, as opposed to, did you find that to be your experience working in the hotel business?
Sure, I think that I worked in the hotel business at a very important part in forming my ideas. And what I realized so clearly in doing research on the customers at Hyatt Resorts, I ran the resort marketing, that the best marketing we did happened on the properties, and that the experience of using the product is so powerful and can communicate so much to the customers. So, yes, that led me to the concepts of what it takes to be the brand and what it means when you say everything is marketing. So, what I would add, Jeffrey's observation is a good one. Of course, the front desk experience, we know, all of us know, or an airline counter, et cetera, mm-hmm. how much that can affect us. The thing is to realize it's more than just being personable. Being nice, being personable is the first step. What you really want is for your employee, to communicate the specific brand message that you're trying to have. So Ritz-Carlton talks about one of their brand values being ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. What that means is it tells you that a Ritz-Carlton person is going to behave in a certain way in interacting with the customer. It's not just being nice, it's communicating that brand. Whereas somebody who works for a Hyatt Resort, for example, would look at it, would display a different kind of behavior that would communicate that brand message.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the brands out there that you admire most today. I know Ray and I have discussed Nike, for example, and certainly Starbucks are both really great brands that do a good job of the customer experience all the way down to the retail level and certainly conscientious of their brand. What brands do you admire today, Steve?
Well, I think of the well-known brands that do the best job of brand harmony, I think it's easy to talk about a company like Southwest Airlines. You know, what other airline would have the flight attendant sing the safety announcement, right? Mm. They've just got this mm-hmm. culture that everybody who works there understands how to be the brand, and of course Disney, et cetera. However, I'm often tempted to be a contrarian and talk about my favorite brands being the corner Italian restaurant in my town, mm-hmm. or the small little shoe store that really knows how to fit you. And what I mean by that is that I think we often mistake good brand for big brand. Business Week has their annual best brands in the world. All it is, it's not the best brands, it's the biggest. Mm-hmm. And since I believe branding happens one customer at a time, if a small business has a really powerful brand, but it's small and it helps them get disproportionate returns and great performance for their business, that's a great brand. It isn't about size.
I think that's a very good point. Do you find that, we just have a little over a minute left, do you find that gauging the ROI on a company's branding effort can be a roadblock to a consistent branding effort?
Yes, and here's the reason. Branding is all about driving business results. Let's not kid ourselves. This isn't about image. It isn't about awareness. It's about being more successful. However, branding doesn't happen with discrete, measurable activities like a direct response letter. Branding happens when the entire experience tells the customer a powerful story. So what you have to do is understand your customers, understand the experiences well enough that you can have faith that having the front desk agent at the hotel deliver a message, et cetera, is important in driving your business results without being able to measure how that one discrete activity contributed to the ROI.
And we're going to have to complete on that, Steve. Thank you for being a guest here on the show today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, now, thank you.
Go on, shovel the sidewalk. There's some snow out there, all right?
Okay.
On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. We'll be back with our final segment in just a minute.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
What do you want when you gotta eat something? And it's gotta be sweet, and it's gotta be a lot, and you gotta have it now. What do you want? Lick, smack, and whip, back and patty, whack, and ink, and knack, and silver, rack, and scowl, whack, and cracker, jack, and boo, cracker, jack.
Back with you on the Advertising Show. It's our final segment of this hour and the second hour of the show. And then thanks again to Steve for dropping by and
mm-hmm.
visiting.
It was awful nice. He had some good things to say.
Yeah, he did, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
It sounds like a good book, too.
Yeah.
We've got Andy Borowitz on the way before we wrap up. We've got Bob Garfield coming up on the 28th.
Mm-hmm.
The 27th, actually.
Year-end show. Kind of a... best of the year, and kind of go through his ad critiques from the year and get his opinions. And
this is a good thing.
Yeah, before you get into Borowitz, real quickly, Shopping.com has launched its first television advertising campaign developed by publicists and Hal Reaney Advertising. The ads were designed to educate consumers on the value of comparison shopping online and to encourage them to try the site during now the holiday season. The campaign, this is what I like about this, Ray, the campaign 30-second broadcast spots feature a humorous take on all too common scenarios in which a shopper learns too late that the Internet offered a better value on the product he or she just bought. The spot then provides a demonstration of the website, revealing the time and cost savings that shopping.com could have made possible. I thought it was an interesting it's a little problem-solution approach, nothing new there, but I thought it was certainly a good way of targeting what is identified as consumers 25-49, and these spots will be airing, as they say in this piece from Media Post Advertising and Media. The spots will be airing on local morning and evening broadcast, as well as during news and primetime cable. So,
Excellent.
Shopping.com is good spots.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can't get away from talking about Saddam.
No.
And his beard and his hair.
And his lice.
And his teeth.
Everybody wants a teeth checkup now. They've seen him getting it.
Yeah. Well,
I need a dental. You
know. Andy Borowitz has a different take on this, though.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for The Advertising Show. And now, here's this week's feature from The Borowitz Report.
The search for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq came to an end this past week as U.S. military officials found chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons hidden in the scraggly beard of former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. The Iraqi madman had instructed his weapons scientists to create the WMDs in microscopic form so that he could carry them around on his person at all times, the official said. U.S. General Ricardo Sanchez said that the discovery of WMDs nestled in Saddam's unkempt facial hair closes the book on one of Operation Iraqi Freedom's most enduring mysteries. Now we know why we never found the weapons of mass destruction, General Sanchez told reporters. We never dreamed they were tiny enough to be hidden on someone's face. The general added that Saddam was capable of launching his deadly weapons cache merely by shaking his head. After he was captured, Saddam received a shave and a haircut from the Halliburton Company, who charged the former dictator the entire $750,000 he had in his possession. The deadly beard was then stored in an airtight container and transferred to a U.S. military laboratory in Wiesbaden, Germany, for future study. At a press conference in Washington, President Bush praised the military for removing Saddam's lethal beard once and for all. Thanks to the efforts of our coalition, Saddam Hussein's whiskers will no longer harbor the world's deadliest weapons, Mr. Bush said. Later in his press conference, the president revealed that U.S. forces found Saddam after receiving a tip from Tikrit that there was an ass in a hole in the ground.
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of the Borowitz Report from The Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to borowitzreport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
What he did is disguise those weapons of mass destruction as oatmeal and Velveeta. And Mars bars, right? Is that what the idiot had, was a Mars bar?
That's funny, yeah. You know, they showed the before and after photo. You saw that.
Yeah, sure.
And apparently he's...
got a facial and everything.
Dropped a few pounds in that hole.
I don't think so. I think he looked fat.
Really? Well, I'm saying...
See, now we're talking like Mary Lou. I think he looked fat,
yes,
didn't you?
But he had better manners.
I don't think so. He's still an idiot.
Yeah, well...
He was still being real challenging to the interpreters. Not interpreters, the interrogators.
Right. Really. Supposedly his first question coming out of that hole was, how's the war going, fellas? I don't know.
Yeah. Not so good, Saddam.
Yeah.
Oh, well, have a nice day.
Yeah. Well,
so now they try him, and let's see what's happened.
You know, I'm surprised that one day, maybe in the future, when they have a before and after, and they catch some guy and they shave him and clean him up.
Yes.
Sponsored by Sports Clips.
Oh God.
You know, or something, that they send him over to clip it and cut it, and you know, maybe kind of like a product placement.
Yeah,
on the news.
I don't think I'd want to be my product placement with him. I hope that he makes it to trial because he's such a
And hopefully it's
high profile.
Hopefully it's a different trial than the people they're doing over the other guy that they're still trying after all these years.
Osama?
No, that starts with an M.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And we'll save that till next week.
Yes, and if you know the answer, just let us know.
It's an M, and it starts with a Vic. I mean, it ends with a Vic, and it's over
Milosevic.
There.
Milosevic.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
What is it?
Milosevic.
Milosevic.
I think that's right.
That's right. I'll take leaders for 50, Alex.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Next week, Bob Garfield, a columnist of Ad Review, Advertising Age magazine. It's a year in review, and we'll
Boy, Bob is certainly outspoken. If you've never heard him on the show before, this is a real treat.
And no punches held.
He'll be from his, on the weekend, he'll be from his home studio.
Mm-hmm.
Not just on the phone, his home studio.
All right.
That's good. Advertising Show is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit Advertising Age Magazine online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midget production.